You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The 1960s through 1980s is often referred to as the golden age of serial killers. Names like Jeffrey Dahmer, John Wayne Gacy, Paul John Knowles, all active then. From 1980 to 1990 alone, the number of new serial killers in the United States was just under 700. While pop culture is still fascinated by their stories, from Netflix's Ted Bundy feature to true crime podcasts, we don't hear about active cases as much these days. Peter Vronsky is an investigative historian and former film and television documentary producer. He's the author of several books, including his latest, Sons of Cain, a history of serial killers from the Stone Age to the present. Peter, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, Peter, my teenagers were watching this Ted Bundy documentary about the serial killer, and it hit me, you know, when I was their age in the 80s, it seemed like we were hearing about serial killers all the time. Nowadays, it's not on the landscape. Is that just perception, or do the numbers back that up?
No, the numbers do back that up. Indeed, in those three decades between 1970 and 1999, 82% of 20th century American serial killers first made their appearance. And today, the number is significantly lower in terms of apprehensions now. Now, that also accompanies, of course, a dramatic decline in homicide and violent crimes overall since the 1990s. So that's, you know, that's one of the first factors that we're looking at.
When did we first develop this concept, this phrase, a serial killer?
Well, the term itself, serial killer, is introduced in around 1981. It begins to appear in the New York Times to describe the Atlanta child killer, Wayne Williams. We used other terms previously, recreational killers, just psychos, stranger on stranger killers, but just this notion of profiling them, identifying them, categorizing them, that is something that emerges in the 1980s, along with that term, serial killer, which, you know, all of us now know what that means. Prior to that, we used to see them as just each serial killing case as an individual aberration.
And there are a lot of different definitions that people use that overlap in different ways. What kind of key definition do you use as you focus on serial killers?
I use the current FBI definition because I think it fits the bill. And as of 2004, since the San Antonio Serial Murder Symposium, the FBI defines a serial killer as anyone who illegally kills two or more individuals in separate episodes with a cooling off period in between for any motive whatsoever.
And in your newest book, you focus on a particular subcategory of that. And I think that is what a lot of people think of when they think of serial killers, some sort of ritualistic or sexualized element. Can you talk, without going into too graphic detail, about that?
Well, exactly. You know, you have prophet serial killers. You have missionary serial killers. So you have all these different categories. But I think when, you know, we popularly think of a serial killer, we think of, you know, the John Wayne Gacy's and the Ted Bundy's indeed. And these are fantasy-driven sexual serial killers. You know, since Jack the Ripper, this has been a particular category of serial killer that just fascinate and horrify us.
Talking to Peter Vronsky, his new book is Sons of Cain, a history of serial killers from the Stone Age to the present, focusing on what's been called a golden age of serial killing, three decades or so from 1970 to 1999, and why there are fewer serial killers now. So let's get to that big question. Why this big peak in serial killers that rose and then fell?
Well, you know, serial killing often reflects what's happening in society. You know, it's not a coincidence that Jack the Ripper made his appearance in Whitechapel at that particular moment in the late 1880s. In the same way, there were factors in American society at that time. And you know, we often associate that serial killers are reflecting the time in which they're killing. But, you know, when you actually look at the evolution of a serial killer, they often, first of all, they make their first murder often when they're, you know, 27 to 28 years old. But their fantasies and their compulsions often begin to be formed as early as the age of five. So when we look at John Wayne Gacy, when we look at Ted Bundy, and the era in which they were killing, you need to back them up some 20, 25 years to when they were children, when they first began to fantasize about doing this. And of course, that takes us into the immediate post-World War II and Cold War eras, from the late 1940s to the early 1960s. And in that period, there are two major factors that I suggest in my book, Sons of Cain, that, you know, Cain to play a major role. One, you had many men returning from the Second World War far more traumatized than we acknowledged at that time. You know, there was no diagnosis back then of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And so you have a generation now of traumatized men bringing up a generation of young boys. And so as I started looking at the fathers of some of those serial killers from that era, very often there's this description of kind of sullen, isolated men in silence raising their kids. So I think that's one factor. The other factor, I think you have these two genres of very popular culture that celebrates the abduction, restraint, torture, rape, and murder of women. The men's adventure magazines and the True Detective magazines, which always on their covers, right? They would portray a woman who's bound, her clothing disheveled, sometimes scratched and beaten, prepared to be raped and murdered. And she's looking off the magazine cover towards the buyer of the magazine, the message being that, you know, she could be had for the price of the magazine. And these magazines were not sold under the counter. They were sold in supermarkets, in drugstores, newsstands, along, you know, with Time, Newsweek, Life magazine, Ladies' Home Journal, Popular Mechanics. There was no stigma around these celebrations of rape at that time. So they shaped, I think, the fantasies of some of these, you know, damaged children that eventually, once they reached that age of 27 and 28, would you know, cross the line and commit their act. It's not a cause, but it's a number of factors coming together, you know, these perfect storms.
Peter, if we as a society didn't want to raise a new generation of serial killers, I assume we don't, based on your study of past serial killers, share some thoughts on how to prevent that in the future.
Well, you know, that's a question that's often asked, and I think it's a very utopian solution. We have to bring our children up in, you know, families that remain intact with you know, with love and care focused on the early period of a child's life. And again, that's a utopian thing. And that doesn't guarantee anything either. I'm at this moment interviewing a serial killer here in New Jersey who had that perfect childhood. His mom was there. His dad was there. They were raised in a middle-class family in this idealistic suburb. You know, he was in Little League, and yet he committed all these horrific, sadistic crimes, and there seems no explanation. So even that is not a guarantee.
We'll leave it there for now. Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Anytime.
That's Peter Vronsky, investigative historian and a former film and television documentary producer. He's the author of several books, including his latest called Sons of Cain, A History of Serial Killers from the Stone Age to the Present, talking about why there were so many serial killers relative today from about 1970 to 1999, why the numbers went up and then way back down.